Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled.
Film.
Conversation.
Hooray!
Woo! Hi, I'm Richard Nicholas, and with me to chat about a film is Anthony Evans.
Hello.
And Abby Bain.
Hello.
This week's film was picked by Anthony and is F times 2.
That's right. Or F slash X 2.
Yeah,
or
sorry.
Just FX 2. The Deadly Art of Illusion.
So, could you give the details of who made it, Anthony, please?
I can indeed. Well, FX2 follows the continuing exploits of special effects wizard Rolly Toiler, who has now shifted to the world of toy making. And as he somehow gets embroiled in another special effects police sting mystery, he calls on old acquaintance and now private detective Leo McCarthy to help him sort it all out. Directed by Robert Franklin and written by Bill Condon, FX2 stars Brian Brown, Brian Dennehy, Joanna Gleason, Philip Bosco, Rachel Tikotin, and Kevin J. Connor.
Yeah, and we've already done a podcast for FX, the first one. Or it looks like on the DVD cover, Fix, but it is FX. Because, you know, it's about an effects guy. And, you know, now we're doing two because, Anthony, you wanted us to do two in the first place?
Well, yeah, I originally wanted us to look at this film because there's a lot more weirdness to this one. But I felt we needed to go through the first one in order to get here. But after watching this film again, I kind of feel like we could have just skipped to this one, really, because the backstory in this film doesn't really go into depth that much from the old film, so it is kind of a standalone film of itself. It feels like less of a sequel and more of just a remake, really.
Well, if it's nice to know that you put us through FX for no reason, then. No, it was.
And I feel like it's going to be a bit of a shame because I think if we skipped to this one, we might have liked it a bit more.
Maybe,
but like the slight kind of mediocrity of the first one might have tainted it a bit.
Plus, it's kind of the same format again, and it doesn't work quite as good as like when Home Alone did it again. It was because I love Home Alone 2, and it's exactly the same as Home Alone 1, and yet this is the same thing: a guy who makes weird effects takes down baddies and solves a crime, sort of. So,
well, yeah, pretty much.
I'm glad we watched the first one, because it does help we understand the reason why the people in this one know each other, and why there's a sort of history that they don't refer to much, but I think it helps clue us in a little bit.
Well, a little bit. But I think the only real thing that comes from the sequel is just that you know that Rolly was involved in a similar thing before, and that he is friends with Leo McCarthy. And that's really about it.
I suppose.
And that is kind of brought up in the film anyway. So,
Abby, what were you expecting when Anthony put this forward?
Well, I didn't remember FX all that well. I remembered it being naff. And I remembered it being silly.
Yeah.
But beyond that, not much. So my expectations were more or less the same for this. Naff. Silly.
Fair enough. The trailer has a few tantalising clips in it. They go, all right, what's this about? So I was geared up for something quite mad. I don't know. I expected more of the same, but I was also expecting it to be a bit weirder because Anthony had mentioned he wanted to do especially number two rather than the first one. So here we are, like about a year and a half later. Why did you see this the first time then, Anthony?
Oh, I think I just the classic. I saw this on TV when I was younger, probably when I shouldn't have, and certain images stuck with me.
So instead of seeing a therapist, you chat to us about it. That's good.
You're a bit cheaper, yes.
Oh, thanks.
Only a bit.
Yeah, but the psychological insight we give is tantamount to psychotherapy.
I suppose I should say, similar to Abby, I was with the first FX film, like with a title like that, you're expecting big explosions, cheesy. It's a bit of a mission statement, isn't it, what the film's going to be. And I think this film delivers better on that. It's a bit bigger. It looks like it had a bit more money behind it. And it delivers slightly better on that promise made by the title of both films.
Sure, I guess. Well, I think the thing to start with is the opener, because it's quite the spectacle they open with. And much in the same way as the first one, it kind of does a psych out where you think you're watching the film, and then, it's just a movie. But it's one heck of a visual we open with. Does anyone want to describe what we get as the first bit?
Yeah, I'll give it a go. I'll say in the first film, we started on a similar thing where we go into a bar and it turns into like a big gunfight. But in the first one, it's a lot more obvious what's going on, don't you think? And it's like, oh, well, this is obviously a movie set.
Yeah.
This is just going to be a special effects thing. But in this one, it kind of catches you a little more off guard, because the film opens a little more cliched with the helicopter shots over the dark city, and we slowly zoom into a car, which is like speeding and cutting traffic up.
Terrible saxophone music everywhere.
Yeah, and the car is seemingly driven by a woman, and she almost runs over a homeless person. And then it turns out it's not actually a woman. It is a rather disgusting-looking transvestite robot
that proceeds to get shot at by the police, look ridiculous as it's being shot, and you can see all the circuits, and it gushes a kind of blue blood everywhere.
Yes, it's quite the way to start the film. It gets your attention, doesn't it?
It really is. The fact that you kind of know, they're not showing the face of the woman driving the car. There's going to be a reveal here. And then when it's this ugly prosthetic bloke's face, it's so frightening and horrible. And then it continues to just have a kind of Terminator moment where it's like coming apart and shedding limbs and gushing blue stuff. And then, weirdly, it decides, oh, I know, what would a weird transvestite robot do? It would have a missile inside of its severed arm, just in case it comes off in a fight. And it launches a rocket at the police that then failed to explode in a dramatic way because it's a set. And then, you know, they yell cut and go, oh, that wasn't very good. And then it explodes, ha-ha, you know. That's the opener. So it's an impactful start to the film.
And you don't see it coming. It's like it slowly escalates, and then I think there's a point. I think he like rips the what's it called, the tax thing, out of the ground. What are they called?
You mean the parking meter?
Yeah, like he rips the parking meter out of the ground, and then it's like, wait a minute, that's a bit odd. And then it kind of clicks. So I think this film gets it right. I really like this opening. It really kind of sucks you in and catches you out, but the first one doesn't.
Disturbs you beyond belief as well. It is just like this ridiculous, hulking, transvestite, gadget, robot thing going ballistic. And then you go, it's about this guy who makes effects. Only he doesn't make effects anymore. He now makes toys arbitrarily.
But he's still there, somehow.
He's on the set of this film, but doesn't make effects for it. And now he does toys just because, I don't know, a couple of the gadgets he takes down baddies with are going to be toy-related.
Because they had to change some of the script from the last one.
Don't know why. They could have just made a TV series where an effects man solves crimes. They could have gone downscale and made it more like a kind of MacGyver Columbo dude. But, yeah. Hey, we got what we got. Abby, how did you react when the cyborg transvestite was gushing blue stuff?
I thought that we were going to go down a sort of John Carpenter type road, and then we didn't.
Could have been a good
thing. Yeah, you're right. It's almost like a little mini John Carpenter film within the film.
A schlockier film within a fairly schlock film, anyway. But, you know,
honestly, I wouldn't have minded watching that film.
When transvestite robots attack, presumably would be what it calls it. Ugly transvestite robots attack, even.
Certainly unique.
Yeah. Oh, well, anyway, that's just the setup to go, hey, we're back in the flow. Look, here's... what's Brian's... Well, there's two Brians, so we shouldn't call them Brian and Brian. What's the character's name? Rolly? Rolly?
Yeah, I think it's pronounced Rolly in the film, so we'll go with that. Brian Brown plays Rolly. And reprising his role from the first film. Yeah, he's, I think he's kind of...
Still as uncharismatic, but acceptable as always.
Yeah, he does a decent enough job.
Always finding... Again, what I liked is in the first one he does it, but in this he still finds excuses to get his shirt off where there's no reason. Oh, about this scene where I'm talking to my stepson? Shall I just have my top off of this, guys? I'm quite buff, really. I don't look it from the face, but downstairs there's a few abs, and it's like, I guess you could take your top off.
at least he kept his trousers on this time. Although I do remember you getting quite excited seeing male nudity in an 80s film.
It was just nice for it to be reversed, you know, from the usual, an excuse to get a woman with her clothes off. But this time, you know, Raleigh, the Australian toy maker now, toy designer, who lives in an extraordinarily lavish and ladsy apartment, considering, I don't know how much, you know.
Which made sense, being like a movie effects guy. But now that he's just a kind of toy maker, it seems a bit weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, whatever he does, he must be very high up the chain of, or just, you know, they must make loads of money off of him. Whatever, he's got a swanky apartment with weird fish tank fountains and ladsy rooms like a pool room, and it just looks really cool and contemporary for the time. I'm kind of, I'm a bit jealous, that's what it was. And I go, how can this fake guy get such a nice apartment, crime-solving effects, dude? Anyway, my bitterness aside.
That's the thing, as well, other than the woman and the boy, I guess the boy's dad, doesn't seem to know anyone or work with anyone, or...
He doesn't call in the... Because you think effects guys would be a big team in a workshop, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and that's what they kind of had in the first one. Like, he had his, like, assistants and team, and he could call on them if need be. But here it's more of a... Well, I wouldn't say alone, because it's more of a double act then between him and McCarthy, who turns up later. And I will say that those two have a really good chemistry together.
Yeah.
And works really well. I think Brian Dennehy is the most interesting character
in
this one.
I miss his moustache, though, from the first one. Like, that was a classy move, having a moustache, and I missed it. Yeah, it's basically in this one, I guess, Dennehy's no longer a cop. Is that right? Was he a cop in the first one?
Yeah, he was kind of, I wouldn't say corrupt cop, but more of like an old-fashioned one.
And now he's a private dick.
Which kind of makes more sense, I suppose, for the character.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, it's something like 5 years on or whatever since the last ridiculous events. But, you know, it's essentially about... Well, I suppose it isn't about his cop buddy initially, but it's the two of them eventually investigating a crime and trying to stop various people, like corrupt cops and mob people, and it gets kind of convoluted and weird. But the inn is because Raleigh, or whatever, is asked to help in a sting operation on a peeping Tom, and for some reason they can't just do a regular police sting. There's some contrived reason why they need loads of special effects needed. Does everyone have a go at explaining what exactly is up with the sting they do?
It's so absurd that I find it difficult to say it out loud, because I feel like I'm a liar.
We'll try and wrap your head around it, Abby.
They want to entrap a peeping Tom who has previously assaulted women by luring him into an apartment by having a beautiful woman in it taking a shower, and then they arrest the guy. That is the reasonable portion of the plan.
Yeah.
The unreasonable portion of the plan is that they want the woman to come into the bathroom and then switch places with a cop who is wearing a fake woman's torso and is dressed the same as she is.
They also have kind of like a video screen playing this woman showering as well, like
for the transition between the two of them.
I don't know why they couldn't have just put it on the whole time, like, and had the peeping Tom come in on her having the shower and not being there. But it's mainly okay. Your cop buddy needs you for a sting, and for some reason he desperately needs, even though he's a bulky cop, he needs to be wearing a fake bust and dress up like a woman for some reason. And it doesn't even come into the sting, really. Like, he doesn't actually need to be seen by the Peeping Tom to make the arrest. At no point is he used to lure the guy. And if so, why can't it just be a female cop?
Yeah, the way this thing goes down, it's like, I suppose if you say, like, they were planning for any eventuality, then
right.
Okay, maybe a little sense. But the way it actually goes down, it's also needless.
It is.
You could argue that they're doing this to, like, protect the modesty of the woman.
Yeah.
But then they've already filmed her showering anyway and are projecting it.
And
So that's out the window. Second of all, the way it's set up is she's already out of the apartment before the Peeping Tom turns up. So her safety is not a question. And thirdly, the man doesn't need to dress up as a woman because the room is full of smoke and he can't be seen anyway.
Yeah.
That was my thing, where because they didn't do anything to his face, what's the idea that the perp, she'll have to call him, will come up behind him, in which case he doesn't need the prosthetic breasts. And if the guy comes up in front of him, he's still going to see the guy's face.
Yeah. It's really, really mad. All the elements they add that don't do anything to improve on the safety of it or the capture. Like, they're using the woman as bait, which is a bit harsh. But the fact that they have a smoke machine to simulate steam, which is apparently needed because you can't just have a shower on to do that. And they got, like, hidden cameras, okay. And they have a weird... I don't want to say it, but they have fake breast radio where you press a nipple and communicate via the boob.
Which they don't even use. They show it as a joke,
yeah. And
then it never comes up again.
And he has a radio watch on his wrist that he puts down so that, you know, he can't communicate to the effects guy watching in the van. And it's just, what is going on? Why do we have a smoke machine, a cop dressed in drag with fake breasts, with a radio in, and, like, there's no need for any of this because just, you know, lure the Peeping Tom to a room and arrest him. You know, like, how hard is it? Like, is this... It's so elaborate and has so many extraneous parts. And you just have to question the motivations of pretty much everyone involved. But it's complicated further because not only is this convoluted sting stupid, there's also a corrupt cop trying to set up and frame, a murder. Like, he's trying to use the Peeping Tom, who's potentially going to do a murder. It's hard to explain, but corrupt cops have set it up so the cop who's dressed in drag and pretending to be this woman now gets murdered by a second person. Like, and it's all just, you know, to have a murder cover-up of killing this cop guy. Oh, I can't even explain it. It's so stupid.
It does... The whole thing does just seem overly elaborate and arbitrary, considering it feels like it's like, oh, well, this happened in the first film. We better do it again. Even though if I was Raleigh, I would not go anywhere near this.
No, but he's persuaded by some hackneyed line about, what if it was someone you loved? Think about it then. What if she was? What if your girlfriend was the one, a victim? Would you step in then? It's like, well, I might, but I'd be personally connected then, wouldn't I? Like, just, I don't know. Anyway, Raleigh helps, but luckily he's put in some hidden cameras that the corrupt cops didn't know about initially. So he's filmed the true crime going on in the smoke that's unnecessarily billowing out everywhere for comedy. So this dragged-up police officer and friend of Raleigh is killed by some third person. And it's captured. And then they can do the classic CSI. We can zoom in on the video much more than you actually can and enhance the visual to get picture perfect, you know, shots of all of the crime going down and the people involved.
I will say all of the, like, sort of computer technology in this is very, how do I put this? Quaint. And kind of, it's quaint and it's obvious that these are the first kind of cliches that are growing out of kind of
the misconception, like, of how technology. Yeah.
However, like, it is still, I kind of, like, there's a scene later on where someone has to send data by modem, and it's also complicated and long, and I don't know, it felt kind of real.
Yes, but then that bit...
Which is a bit of a counterpoint to what's happening here.
In the days pre-internet when this was set, it is kind of an unusually backwards way to send information. But it still has a little boy who, because he's young, knows all about computers and stuff. And the kid just seems to know a lot more than he should, considering it's the early 90s, and he's like, I don't know, like 8, 10 maybe?
He's also very, very calm and like collected for a young boy who finds himself in all these dangerous situations.
Yes, he's a good kid, but slightly implausibly, knowing, I don't know. Anyway, that's the premise. Is there's corrupt cops who have murdered the buddy of Raleigh, the effects guy, and now Raleigh is on the run / has to hide out and wants to find out what's going on, because he essentially knows which corrupt cop set up the murder, because he has the footage, and you know he's working with him initially, so that's the thing anyway. He's got to stop the future crimes and not get killed himself. And luckily, you know, he's got an ex-detective buddy to call on. And that sets up our Brian Dennehy team-up. What's Brian Dennehy's character's name?
Leo McCarthy.
Yeah, so Leo is he hooks up with him, doesn't he? And he goes to his weird apartment where he's built an entire bar all to himself, like a kind of Irish pub almost, in his own house with pool tables and just a full bar it's not even like a little liquor cabinet to himself. Like, he's got pool tables and all the kind of rubbish you'd want if you were actually, you know, starting up a bar, but it's in a weird apartment block somewhere. He's a right weirdo.
And whilst it is very cool and you would kind of like to go there, it is just pointless.
Yeah.
They don't do anything really there.
And he's supposed to be a bit more of a loner who doesn't, like, see that many people anyway. So it doesn't even fit with this. He doesn't have people come to his bar. He just has it to himself. It's so weird. What did you make of, like, his situation, Abby?
It's like you say, he was meant to be a loner, and they suggested that no one ever comes to his apartment and that he's extremely security conscious. So I don't understand what that bar is for.
Him. He's always wanted it, but... He doesn't like people, so he's got it to himself now.
It's also, like, there's one point where Raleigh eats some nuts that were on the bar, and it turns out that they've been there for 5 years, because they're just there for show.
Show nuts. For his no friends. And he doesn't like nuts. It's your bar, mate. Don't put nuts out if you don't want nuts.
It's just wrong.
It is. He also has pickled eggs that we don't know if he eats or not. It's the right madman. Also, one of the things I did like that was a kind of reference to the first film was he has the jump-out monster thing. Like, he has a cupboard at the front of it, near to his door, with a monster that jumps out on people automatically in the first one. And he manages to get Raleigh back by having him, like, quickly come into the house and be scared by it. And it's like, oh, it's the monster from the thing, and oh, you're an idiot.
And it becomes, like, such an inappropriate moment as well. They've just escaped, like, an assassination attempt.
Yeah, this guy's on edge and worried. And it's like,
no, he just feels like, it's like, yeah, I can give him a huge scare. That won't give him a heart attack or anything.
I'm going to prank the crap out of him. Like, yeah, it's ridiculous and horrible. But, you know, the guy had loads of things set up in his little studio in the first one, so... He had it coming. 5 years it took. 5 years of every day he opened that door, went into his own apartment, it bursts out and he kind of flinches. He does that every day, knowing one day that Aussie's coming back and he's going to pup his pants. But
I suppose we should mention the scene before this. Like I did mention, it's an assassination attempt. And that's when the second kind of grey-haired assassin turns up and has come to take away all Raleigh's evidence and kill him.
Yeah, because we don't really get to know this grey-haired assassin, other than he's grey-haired and he does all the killing for the corrupt cops. And they have the big fight in the apartment, like you say. It was quite, you know, quite fun, right, everyone?
Well, yeah, I think it's probably the most entertaining scene of the film is the fight scene in his apartment.
What did we...
Just because of the gimmick that they use, I suppose.
Go on.
Well, earlier in the film, we are introduced to Rolly as a toy maker, and he brings out one of his new inventions, which is a life-size clown robot, which is controlled by a kind of exosuit that you wear, and it responds to your every action.
Yep. And it's as elaborate as it is terrifying, and as unplausible as it is disturbing.
Yeah, and it is a bit, it is kind of just a bit obvious that it's a man in a suit.
Yeah. I mean, the technology didn't exist then, and doesn't really exist now. And it's quite a stupid idea for, I don't know, the odd rich kid that can buy this ugly monster clown that then can just mimic your gestures, essentially. And weirdly, you can move your fingers and its eyebrows and eyes move.
And not only that, the film aptly demonstrates that it can be very easily used for, like, murder and kidnapping.
Yes.
And attacking people.
Yeah, because, you know...
So, not the most appropriate of children's toys.
It's so ugly as well. It's just this disgusting plastic-faced clown with cheap red hair. It looks cheap as well. All of the electronics inside it are so advanced and ridiculous. You'd think they'd have a better costume for the outside of the clown. It doesn't even look like it's got a... even though it's got a person in it, it doesn't kind of look like it's got a person in it. It looks a thin and pathetic character. And it's just horrible. And it's so contrived.
Yeah, so contrived. It made more sense if that was part of a film set than a toy maker's set.
Yeah, if you had, like, animatronics that could fight back across the room rather than one ridiculous clone.
Which is essentially what they show us anyway in the first scene.
Yeah.
An animatronic robot that can be controlled. It's like, you've set that up. Why do we need to have this ridiculous clown thing now? Although it is entertaining when used, I will admit.
Yeah, because while he's getting attacked, he basically goes, oh, of course, I can move the, the weird, what exosuit did you say?
That's what I'll go with.
The weird swimsuit with wires on. Not swimsuit. What's that thing people go surfing in? Not the sea. The suit itself. What are they called? Wetsuits?
Yeah.
A wetsuit with leads on. He flicks the legs and then, of course, the clown kicks the guy and then he starts putting it on and fighting. And basically, there's an awkward three-way fight where a clown helps and climbs on a guy while the guy's fighting the dude controlling it. And do we have other bits? Like, there's a bit of gunplay and fish tank smashing in the apartment. What else goes on?
Well, it's kind of all over the place, isn't it? It's a fairly scrappy little fight that kind of goes around the whole apartment. And it is an entertaining fight, I think. What else happens? The clown suit, he throws him over the side of the balcony whilst...
miming the throw himself, I suppose.
Yes, which doesn't make any physical sense. Yeah. But there we are.
There's lots of things we can go, hang on, why hasn't the clown fallen down the same time as him? Or, how did the clown get turned around to conveniently in the right place to fight back?
This fight actually leads up to one of the more disturbing bits about the clown, is when he just decides to keep the head for a while.
Because it breaks, doesn't it, from the fall, and then...
Yeah. And he decides, the best thing that I can do with this clown's head now is to have it turn 360 degrees and wiggle its eyebrows.
But an obvious choice.
Oh, he's foreshadowing the rebuilding, see, because it's going to come up again. Which, as soon as we watched it, I said to both you, Abby, and my nephew Adam, who was watching it with us, oh, that clown's coming back at the end. It was 100. As soon as they said, I'd be like, this is going to play such a pivotal role in this. And the clown does steal the show in its yes. in its horribleness and its contrivedness. But yeah.
Rolly is saved from that assassination attempt by then McCarthy, which brings us to his bar. And then the film kind of forgets about Rolly for a little bit and just follows McCarthy as he goes some police procedural stuff.
Yeah, he becomes a private eye and just does lots of investigating, talking to DAs and following up on leads, and it's kind of dull. It's odd.
Yeah, there was the strange thing about this. I don't remember the first one all that well, but I do remember them doing stuff together more. In this one, it's Rolly does some stuff. They cross over a bit. And, sorry, what was the other guy's name?
McCarthy.
McCarthy does some stuff. But really, it's just McCarthy's investigation and Rolly helps out a bit.
He does all the legwork, and then all the while you're thinking, well, what's Rolly making? What's he doing? He's putting together stuff. But he doesn't make that many ad-libbed set. I mean, he does do some elaborate stuff. There's kind of a Home Alone moment where he sets up a lot of stuff in the house at the end. But really, he just MacGyvers stuff together. Like, there's a fight in a supermarket against this grey-haired assassin again, and he just, like, puts couples of few items together to do little, I don't know, distractions or... Like, he does weird, stupid booby traps in a supermarket when he's, like, fleeing from this assassin, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much the next scene, isn't it? They kind of find out what the mystery is, which involves some gold Michelangelo-decorated coins that they have to find.
They pull out of nowhere. Like, we set up with a Peeping Tom story, and then it's just about, I know, Michelangelo made some gold coins that the police are after and therefore have to murder other cops for and sell to the mob. And it's just like, what? What's all this for?
Yeah, so they figured that out and then realised that the kid, his effective adopted son, I suppose, has some information on where the medallions might be. So they have to go to him. But in that happening, the assassin catches on. So they have to go and save him and his mother in a supermarket. And yeah, and that scene becomes very, very silly.
What do we have? We have some kind of boot polish plus a lighter manages to make popcorn go off, which is enough of a distraction to confuse an assassin. What else do we have? Like, we have exploding beans in cans at one point, because... Oh, he tapes lighters to hairspray, and that apparently makes a ticking time bomb of beans in cans.
Yeah, there's also a point where Rolly just kind of gets into a metal trolley and pushes it at him. And for no real reason other than to get away from him when he has to flee when he's done.
Oh, do you mean
this
the one
task
that's got diapers on it and
oil?
Oil, yeah.
It has diapers and oil because apparently diapers and the metal back of the pushcart thing are bulletproof. And I guess the oil is to set up a slick slash like a little trail so that you can light on fire, see, and burn the guy.
Who just walks blindly into it, even though he can see it coming.
Yeah. Abby, did it put you in mind of a certain fight in the wrestling world?
I wasn't going to bring it up. But yeah, there was a fight between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Booker T that happens in a supermarket and has a lot of the same sort of tropes.
It does. I would have liked to have seen Austin and Booker T maybe MacGyver up some things, but getting hit over the head with various groceries is pretty fun. In fact, this supermarket fight could have, you know, been a bit better if he'd have decided to do the more practical thing and maybe just throw blunt objects at this guy. He then risks being shot, but he came up with some really stupid things off the cuff anyway. It was odd.
Yeah, exactly. It's just it gets very silly because he just does things that don't make any sense but look good.
None of them toys. None of them really effects. Just a bit of, if I do this, this might react that way. Whatever.
Yeah. And it just the whole scene just takes a kind of Home Alone kind of feel.
Yeah.
And it just becomes very silly and doesn't really fit in with the rest of the film.
Mm. How do we get to the part where essentially we're having the most Home Alone scene where for some reason Rolly can just wander up and go into the house where all the mobsters are, despite them having, you know, guards and stuff, and it basically attracts them all into the house in order to trap, like, booby trap them in some way and knock them out or whatever. How do we get to that ending? Where, like, I don't want to talk about every bit.
Yeah, it's pretty much just after this bit where they wrap up the assassin. They get some information out of him by, How would you describe what happens to him? His face gets stamped with plastic.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the best bits, actually.
His head gets shrink-wrapped like a turkey.
Exactly like a turkey, in a shrink-wrapping machine for turkeys. Even the little stamp, I like that. And he can't breathe, so...
Yeah, and it was both, like, really funny and really kind of terrifying as well.
Yeah, it's quite the image. That's one of the top images of the film. I can't believe I forgot that. Yeah, so, you know, he's got his head plastic wrapped like a turkey, even with the back bit as well. And he lets him breathe and he tells him where they are, blah, blah, blah. Let's get to the bit where Ollie fills his boot with things, slash forgets to fill his boot with most of the things he uses. Like, they deliberately show us him kitting himself out with things he might use on this operation to take down the baddies. And they don't show us half the stuff he uses. But he fills his boot up and it goes to their manor house where blah, blah, blah. Now, the thing that confuses me, all of his distraction techniques made no sense. He uses...
Nope.
At some point, doesn't he use, like, mashed potato and, I can't even say it. He knowingly takes mashed potato flakes, instant mash with him, so that he can put it in front of a fan that's presumably in the house that he knows is there, to make it look like it's snowing from a window, to get one of the guards to come in, and then...
So he can gas them.
I don't know why he couldn't just gas them from wherever he... Oh, I remembered the best one. Does anyone want to explain how he stops the guard dogs getting him?
Well, he fills up a tennis ball shooter with hot dogs.
Yeah.
And uses that to fire the hot dogs at the dogs to trap them in a tennis court.
Genius, really, isn't he?
Yes. And the weird thing is, the guard just kind of lets the dogs loose to go and get these flying hot dogs.
Yeah.
So, really, the guard is pretty stupid and kind of deserves to get gassed.
Ah, but if an intruder is coming, he just has to let the dogs off to go and investigate and then, you know, hunt that guy down. But it is just, I won't follow up on this. And then, when the guy walks over to where the dogs are, he doesn't... presumably he got distracted and booby-trapped some other way. But he doesn't just go, why are they eating loads of hot dogs? Hang on, this is suspicious. How were hot dogs strewn everywhere? And just the fact that they shoot off into the air, no one else questions flying hot dogs. Just let the dogs off the leash, they'll be fine. Whatever, he traps them with the hot dog scenario. And you say he gassed the thing, but he gassed the guy by distracting him with instant mash. But what was the... He put, a special laser thing that went from, the banister to a table, and there was some kind of trigger to get gassed, wasn't there? That was quite elaborate.
Yeah, instead of just kind of gassing him in the face, which is an instant takedown, he has to, set up a whole kind of laser-triggered machine to gas him.
He had to break into the house to do this. He had to break into the house without being seen, to go upstairs, to do something odd.
Yeah.
Just to do that. It's so weird. Abby, do you remember any of the other weird things he does? Because he has a boot of things.
I don't. Because they're not contiguous in any way. He just does stuff at random. I remember later on that he pretends to be set on fire.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much it. What's happening now is, kind of Rolly is setting up all the special effects and McCarthy goes in and, confronts everyone and tries to arrest them.
Yeah.
But then there's a heel turn by one of McCarthy's kind of district attorney friends who he brought along. And it turns out she's on the bad guy's side.
Well, actually, there's some odd chemistry between him and the DA, because she basically tells him everything he needs to know in one of the, investigation moments. But it because she works for the bad guys, it's just a hackneyed... Contrived is the word of the day, I think. But it's just a contrived way to have someone to betray people at the end. But they have a kind of... They've built up a bit of a relationship there. They've chatted and stuff. And also, this detective guy had his hacker police... The classic policewoman who wears glasses and sits at a computer and shouldn't really give him the information he wants, but will anyway. She's, going out with him and gets killed in some assassination attempt as well that I forgot that.
Yeah, I was really sad about that bit because I really liked the chemistry between them. They have the same kind of relationship in the both films.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, it's really kind of sad when she has to snuff it because you don't want her to die because they make a really good couple.
If only he'd taken her to a proper Chinese restaurant instead of just a vendor on the streets or a drive-by can happen. If he'd been classier, she could have lived. but anyway, we do have this kind of confrontation at the end where they blather on about betrayals and gold and, the mafia's apparently in on this now and they're going to give the gold to the Vatican and the the corrupt cops are outed and they've got enough information and blah, blah, blah. They talk for ages, and basically all the guy does is he gets caught out by this betrayal that you mentioned, and then he manages to just talk his way out of everything and stop them from killing him by keeping talking.
I haven't seen anything like that since the very oldest movies that I've seen that still had talking in them, and how nobody gets shot in old movies.
You can't get shot till someone's finished a sentence. So the fact that he can just go, wait a minute, I'm going to make you all betray each other by making you doubt each other's motives and play on each other and remind characters that are knocking a bigger cut as they thought they were that they might be betrayed. It's like, so he's just shoot this idiot.
Yeah, he's having some kind of death filibuster.
Yeah, he is. If I can keep making them think they're all betraying each other, I won't die. At any point, they could have pistol whipped him and just kicked. I mean, this is the mafia guy's house that they're in, so I don't know why they can't cover up a murder quite quickly. This must be the mob. Whatever. It's. I'm still baffled by it. Raleigh's now missing because he's outside doing something. There's a gardener going past. We're not sure what's going on. But Raleigh's, like, hunting down presumably the other henchman and is missing from the scene as the betrayal happens and blah, blah, blah. And I think he should have brought more than just mashed potato sausages and dynamite, because he basically brings, like, the ingredients for bangers and mash and bangers as well.
How to explode it.
Yeah, so maybe he just got the wrong memo. Maybe he thought this wasn't some kind of bus. Maybe he thought it was just a picnic and he wanted to make some food and he had to ad lib.
That makes sense, I suppose.
But not really any toys involved.
No.
Until the very end, where we have... Like, you're going to explain the bit where he sets it... Oh, someone mentioned, anyway, that he set himself on fire as a ruse.
Yeah. So, well, essentially, Raleigh kind of blows up everything, sets himself on fire to, like, scare everyone off. To, just to save the situation, I suppose. And, like, everyone flees... And the cop car gets in the helicopter and flies away.
Ah, no, but we're also forgetting that he has set up a gun that fires blanks because they somehow suspected they'd be betrayed by the DA who was on their side initially. And she's got a gun now that doesn't fire bullets, but he's still got a squib that he can... Like, the private investigator guy has a squib set up, so it looks like he's been killed. So we're all completely thrown off by it, even though... Entirely plausible.
It's really obvious what was happening.
Yes.
And, before we get to the clown, I suppose we should kind of say that they figured out that she was a baddie because her cat was named Samson or something, which could have been just a bit of a coincidence, but there you go.
I don't understand the reference. I mean, I understand the biblical reference, but I don't understand why that's relevant.
It's just kind of thrown in there at some point. I think it's when they're doing the data transfer, like a name that keeps popping up is Samson. And it's just like, oh, your cat is named Samson, is it? That must mean you're obviously part of this unrelated scheme that I'm working on.
Yeah, not only is it a strange coincidence, but it's a coincidence that explains that you are working corruptly for a certain bunch of people and will betray me and attempt to kill me. So because we know that, because your cat's called Samson... We can set up this elaborate sting where I have a fake squib. We have Raleigh on the outside dressed as a henchman on fire and a massive explosion and a helicopter they control via remote control. It's amazing how they come up with these such stupid ideas.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's what it's escalated to now, isn't it? That the bad guy cop is in the helicopter getting away with his, like, £10 million after he's killed everyone.
What's his name? He's got a weird name, isn't he? Like, Silak or something. What's his name?
Siluk.
Siluk. They keep saying it all the way through, so I don't know why I didn't remember. But it's just, Siluk's getting away in the helicopter.
Yes. But then, as he's over the ocean trying to get away, he... only just notices that the helicopter's being piloted by a remote control clown.
Maybe the guy who normally flies for him does have, Andy Saltzman like hair.
And a big red nose.
Mm.
So, whilst silly. It made me laugh.
It is ridiculous. And it makes for a great shot where it's just, oh no, the clown is driving. Raleigh's on the case again.
No. That was one of the most terrifying moments in cinema, when that clown just came round the side of that chair and that guy started screaming.
Yeah, actually, it is a terrifying clown, and he is reacting correctly in that it's the scariest thing that could ever happen. An inanimate thing is driving you, and it looks like that, and yeah, you're going to die, and it's sad. But weirdly, I have another quab for this part, because the whole remote control thing works on the premise that below is Raleigh in a speedboat following the helicopter to stay within range. Meanwhile, his cop buddy is explaining that he had a squib on and talking furthermore about what went on to the criminals that are still alive. And he is somehow still just chatting away. Doesn't matter that they have to get in the boat quite quickly to catch up with the helicopter. Just leave him waiting, it's fine. He's only going to get away with the gold. Oh no, in fairness, he hasn't got the gold, which got switched by the burning man.
Well, you can't rush the Poirot moment, Rich.
He has to look smug and explain everything to us, the idiot viewers, and the people in the room with him. But yeah, they have a speedboat as well, which, I don't know, did they put that there? That's their speedboat, so they knocked out a guy, didn't they, with a... Oh, that's right. They had a remote control submarine. What did that do?
Oh yeah, that shot like poison darts.
Yeah, so submarine, sausages, mashed potato, dynamite. That's what I'll need. That's what I'll need for my big sting. So anyway, they've acquired a speedboat through effects, apparently.
Yeah, and then they use the clown to steal the money, jump out of the helicopter, and leave Psylac just helpless in the helicopter, not really knowing what to do.
Yeah. So, the helicopter isn't remote controlled. The clown is. And that operates the helicopter? Or does he operate the helicopter and the clown?
The way they were doing it seemed like they were operating the clown, which then operated the helicopter.
Did they have, like, a control each, though? Did they, like, one of them have the helicopter? Because otherwise, wouldn't the helicopter just crash into the sea? Or are they hovering it there until proper cops come?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
How do they explain that? Because they got...
Well, they don't. That's the thing. They just leave with the money and the medallions. And not explain anything. They just kind of leave the DA there.
Yeah.
To explain everything, even though she's the bad guy.
They can run away, presumably.
So they just kind of leave with $10 million.
But they don't... What's stupid as well is they switch the gold. The mob are going to give... Because they're, you know, ties to Catholicism, they were actually going to give the gold back to the Vatican in a face turn that's kind of unbelievable, that the criminals are willing to pay money to get some gold coins back for the Vatican because they were the original owners. And it's just, what? So now, there's a kind of weird thing where, oh wait, we've messed up because we've got the real gold now. I guess we'll have to travel to Italy and dump it in the collection plate as an explanation, like to how, like, just, yeah, if a collection plate gets these gold medallions back paid by Michelangelo, the kid who takes the collection won't steal them. They'll understand. It'll be fine. We had to go to Italy for that and final shot where we look smug leaving, like, someplace in Italy.
Yeah, that's pretty much the end. Although, I don't know, did you guys wait till after the credits?
No.
Because there was another, like, just a small 10-second scene.
Go on.
Of Psylac just continuing struggling in the helicopter.
So he's just there forever now.
Yes, pretty much.
He's probably just glad the clown's gone.
Most people would be, yes.
So, thanks, Anthony, yeah.
So, yeah,
what can I say? Oh, wow. It was a train wreck as far as plot goes. Like, it just... Nothing made any sense. Any time to do a contrived idea, it would go out of its way to come up with stupid ways to try and crowbar in things. And it didn't even remember the guy was a toy maker. They had a submarine and a clown. Those are toys. Everything else was just mashed potato, weird gas, hot dogs in a tennis ball gun thing.
Yeah, and the whole film is, it's got the tonal issues that we usually come up against in film bin, where a lot of like the action is quite intense. There's a point where like the cop has his throat slit and he's just kind of bleeding out.
Yeah,
that was a bit much.
Yeah,
really.
And just like and the clown just a frightening image, and it's packed full of that. But then it's got the kind of lowbrow comedy,
jump scare humor, and
yeah, which seems to be aimed more at kids.
Yeah,
and it's just really weird. It's like I don't really know who to recommend this film to if ever I needed to.
Yeah, who is this for?
People who watch normal movies and need to know what else there is. If you live your life just watching regular things that win Oscars or are acceptable, then you have to really watch FX2 to, you know, hopefully people have watched it and are just gladly hearing us. We also saw it and thought it was mad. You're not insane by thinking FX2 was crazy. We also all saw it and thought the same. That's essentially what we're doing. Abby, any overall thoughts? I mean, you haven't really chipped in with your opinions. You've just obviously said the stupid things happened, how they did.
Well, they speak for themselves, don't they? Well, as soon as you say that there was an animatronic clown having a fight and driving a helicopter, I thought it was terrifying. But this isn't a horror movie. You know how this is going down.
Not a rewatch from you then, no?
No.
I am a little bit I'm a bit more fair to the film because I think it delivers on what it promises more than the first film did.
The first film had a better concept though, this idea that you'd use effects from movies to try and help take down baddies makes some sense, although he mainly just murdered people. At least in this he didn't try and kill people all the time.
That's true, but this one just had more. Like it had bigger. It's not only that, but it kind of promises what a sequel promises as well. It's bigger. It's more outlandish. It's sillier.
It is so absolutely ridiculous.
Yes. So I suppose I get where it's coming from, but it is just essentially the first film again. And if it didn't exist, then this one would be higher on my list, but it's entertaining and unique, certainly. The acting is fine. I kind of like all the characters and all the actors in it.
They made a good job of pretending to understand something that didn't make sense.
And just entertaining, if not good.
It is entertaining in its ridiculous bafflingness. It's so funny because it doesn't really play it like this is a silly comedy. It plays it like it's an exciting thrill, but also like, you know, like this guy's got his thing is he does all these effects and he uses them to help get bad guys. And it sort of takes itself seriously while, no, you know, it's not trying to make you laugh, it's trying to, I don't know, thrill you or surprise you, even though it's quite hackneyed. So it is entertaining, but because it is just so good because it's bad.
I think it would work well on a TV in the background, because you just like look over now and again and go, oh, man dressed in a prosthetic woman suit, that's okay. And then you go back and you look over again, oh, an animatronic clown fighting a man. Okay.
I think this would be the best movie to have out of context in another movie where someone's watching TV and this is on.
They just cut to either the transvestite robot or the transvestite cop or the creepy clown fighting. And yeah, it would just be those little snatches of it in the background to go, what is this? And it's for those who know, oh yeah, that's FX2. Yeah, it's like a little exclusive baffling club. People who've watched FX2. So I think we should champion it, even if, Abby, you did find it quite grating. It is, you've got to admit, it is funny in its weirdness.
I admit nothing.
We had fun chatting with my nephew about the stupid problems it had all the way through. What rating do we give this? What badly created toy or effect? Like, we did effects, movie effects, I think, for the first review of their first film, so toy gadgets.
Yeah, toys makes, I suppose, makes more sense.
Anyone got anything? I'm going to say, because it's the first thing I thought of, it is like, in the film Big, he, you know, becomes a toy designer. I won't get into the whole story of Big. We might do that for another show sometime. But Tom Hanks, all grown up from being a little boy, is a toy designer, and he is confronted by some designs the toy company already has. And one of them is a robot that transforms into a skyscraper. I think he thinks it's kind of lame and dull, and no kid wants to play with a skyscraper. And he's right. But it is baffling and weird. They think, I know, a skyscraper. Kids love skyscrapers. They love robots, obviously. So that's cool. It can pretend to be a skyscraper. And I'll have a cityscape. So it's a daft toy. But if you think, how cool is it to be to have that toy from Big? That would be cool. That is funny and baffling. So that's my sort of tangential link / rating. It is a ridiculous toy that makes no sense, but it's still kind of entertaining.
I'd go with something more like a Jack in the Box.
Yes.
Because you've got like this kind of, you've got this nice looking box, and there's a lot of expectation going on, and you're winding it up and it's playing the nice music, and then all of a sudden it's just in your face. It could frighten the life out of you. It could entertain you to no end. But either way, it's going to be big and it's going to be in your face.
And chances are it's going to be an ugly clown thing inside this kind of terrifying.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be like a jack-in-the-box of the hideous animatronic clown. Which, weirdly, I don't really get the joke about calling it Bluey. I guess because it has red hair. Like, what was the thing? He had some excuse for why it's called Bluey, the clown.
I think that's just some Australian humour trying to bleed through.
Oh, banter! Banter!
It's like, oh, it's funny because it's the opposite.
He did wear blue. I didn't really get it.
He just said in the film, like, oh, why would you call it blue? And it's just, that's just what we call redhead people in Australia.
Hilarious. Okay. Why don't we call it
irony?
Plasticky, the horrible clown. Hellspawn. Hello, it's your old friend Hellspawn. Here he is. Like, more frightening than Tim Curry in It, I think. So it's a jack-in-the-box, right? That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Abby, do you have a toy in mind?
Not a specific toy per se, but one of those toys that looks really nice and just sort of is aesthetically pleasing. Until you touch it. And then it's either too dusty, or the fabric's too rough, or the plastic of the toy has aged just enough to have that particularly
yellow stain.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
It just has a funky smell. And you just put it back on the shelf and go, ooh.
Yeah.
Right. That. Some kind of a seemingly normal toy. Though on closer inspection, you probably want to get a few hand wipes after touching it. Okay, right. So it's, you know, it's that, basically. And, you know, I think it was a good one to chat about. And I don't rue watching it. So I'll thank you, but I'm not sure Abby will.
Sorry. And you're welcome, I suppose.
You're making me sound like I disliked it more than I did. I don't like this movie per se, but I don't hate this movie at the same time.
You just recognise that it's a bad movie.
Yeah, and last time we did chat about that terrible conflict disaster that was The Road to Wellville. That was offensively horrible. This is just ridiculous and laughable. So, you know, with that said, we should end the podcast, right?
Indeed. Goodbye, viewers, listeners, and whatever you are.
If for some strange reason in the future they bring out F x 3, then we'll be back here to chat about it, no doubt. But I somehow think that, you know, it's not going to happen.
No.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Although I will mention, there is an FX TV series.
What, like there's actually a link to this?
Yeah. It's... No, yeah, it's the same. It's the same characters. And same, I assume, the same kind of general plot.
Oh dear.
but different actors, and I think it ran for 2 seasons.
What? See,
I've never seen it or known anything about it, but it exists, and well, I am slightly curious.
It was my logical thing was, well, the movies are bad, but it could make a TV show. That's obviously gone through someone else's head, so I guess idiot minds think alike.
Well, it got 2 seasons, so there's a chance the first season might be okay.
Oh, in America, everything gets 2 seasons.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
Effects out.